This is A Word, a podcast from Slate. I'm your host, Jason Johnson. True crime is a hot topic for movies, television, and yes, podcasts. And at the center of many of these stories is a missing woman and secrets that take the storyteller to dark places. But what happens when those dark places are actually very close to home?
I did not know my father's side of the family, and I always knew there was probably a lot I didn't know about myself through that other side.
The story behind the podcast, She Has a Name, coming up on A Word with me, Jason Johnson. Stay with us. Welcome to A Word, a podcast about race and politics and everything else. I'm your host, Jason Johnson. The challenge of finding a missing person is something that's still complicated by race. The police and the media may be a lot slower to search and to mobilize community attention for African Americans than for white folks. And that's what happens now. If you step back in time to the 80s before hashtags and GoFundMes, and while many cities struggled in the grip of the crack epidemic, that made searching for missing people almost impossible. That's the backdrop behind the podcast, She Has a Name. Tanya Mosley, a veteran journalist and co-host of NPR's Fresh Air, shares a story of a missing woman who left her Detroit apartment in 1987 and never came back. But what complicates the podcast and gives it its heart is that the missing woman was Tanya Mosley's sister, a sister Mosley never knew existed until she learned of the disappearance years later. She Has a Name is both a quintessential Black family story and a compelling portrait of a city and an era in urban America. Tanya Mosley joins us now. Tanya, thanks so much for coming on A Word.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
This show is classified as true crime, but it kind of breaks the mold on a number of levels. Why was it so important to you to center the story of your sister Anita's life and not just her disappearance and her death?
A couple of reasons, and you're right to say that it's interesting that it's in the true crime genre, but it is a true crime mystery that I intentionally wanted to turn on its head, the idea of what we think of true crime, in part because, you know, everyone in my life loves true crime, and not in the sense of like podcasts, but even before that, all of the shows that we grew up watching, the Dateline series, Law and Order, the women in my life just absolutely love those shows. And as I was producing this podcast, I found that people who were actually part of the story also love those shows. There is one person that I talked to in this podcast, my sister's sister, Valerie, who is just obsessed with true crime. She watches all these types of shows all the time. But the thing that is not true is our ability to see ourselves in this genre and to see our stories told in a complete way where you understand the nuance and depth of the person who is potentially the victim or the perpetrator. And so I wanted to center Black women in this podcast in a way that allows you to see their full humanity. And also, you know, my sister was someone who maybe folks wouldn't consider to be the perfect victim. And we can get into what that means. But with that, I wanted people to understand what led to her decisions and ultimately led to her disappearance and death. And I thought having this in that true crime designation was really important for us to be able to see this type of story in that designation.
This podcast begins with you discovering that you have a grown nephew, a sister, and that your sister is missing, all in one phone call.
I tell you, in that moment, I just remember when you answered the phone. I just kind of remember you saying hello. I was like, oh, wow. Like your voice. It was something about your voice that was so familiar to me.
Describe what that moment was like for you.
I would say surprise, but also not surprise, because I did not know my father's side of the family. And I always knew there was probably a lot I didn't know about myself through that other side. Also, as I learn more and more about my father, I learn he is truly a rolling stone. So I have lots of brothers and sisters that I don't know about. I think what was devastating for me is to learn that my sister was no longer here and that I would never get to know her. As the years have gone on, I've learned so many things, but I'll tell you that I didn't know about her life up until a few years ago. So I knew I had a sister. I knew I had a nephew. We forged a relationship, my nephew and I, over the last 20 years, but it wasn't until authorities were able to match the DNA that I actually started to dig deeper into her life and who she was before she died. And that is what we get into through this podcast.
Your nephew Antonio brought you into the story of your sister. You know, how did your relationship over 20 years with him develop? And how did what he tell you and didn't tell you about your sister affect that relationship?
Antonio is a special guy. He is someone who is always yearning, always reaching, always searching. And in addition to looking for me and finding me, I also knew that he was looking for other relatives. So he reached out to other family members as he discovered them and forged relationships with them. And it's always been in a way that felt so honest. He wanted to be there for my kids' birthday parties, my wedding, my grandma's barbecue in the backyard. We just had loving, familial-like connections, and those deepened over time where we learned about each other's aspirations and wants and desires. But details about his mother were far and few between. Like, first off, I didn't ask a lot of Jason, and part of that was because I knew the pain of her disappearance was something that he had locked away in a way that kept him a little closed to going deep into her. But he would tell me little things about her. I knew about her personality. I knew what she liked. You know, we'd maybe hang out and he might say, oh yeah, my mom always loved to do this, or she always loved to do that. So that's how I knew her for like 20 years. And then when we were able to find her remains through DNA and we started to talk about telling her story, I sat down with Antonio and I said, I need to know everything. And as I started to talk it through with him, I could tell he was really guarded about many things, like what she did for a living, where they lived, who she was in relationships with. And so the unpacking of that made me realize there was so much more that I didn't know about her. And there was a reason why he was keeping that close to his chest.
I'm wondering why you didn't tell me these really important things that I think that I should have known. They don't really matter in the big scheme of things, but they were just such big omissions that it almost feels like lies that you didn't tell me.
You know, I've heard a lot of things. I've seen a lot of things, right? But I don't, you know, like I don't know how to process that. You know what I'm saying? And I do know the 80s was a crazy time.
No one wants to lead with saying my mother was a drug dealer and my mother then turned into being an addict. Number two, how do you even explain or begin to explain something that you're still trying to figure out yourself? She disappeared when he was 14 years old. He had an idealized version of her. He idolized her. And the ways to keep his psyche whole throughout the 30 plus years that she was missing was to have this formed thought of her as like an angel. And so I've come to understand it, but I will say in the beginning, when he was very close to his chest, when we were creating this podcast, I didn't understand that. I actually thought he was keeping it close to his chest because there was some shame around it. But I realized it was him coming to grips himself with his mother's choices and behaviors, and also grappling with what he could and couldn't do at that age when his mother disappeared.
We're going to take a short break. We come back more about the podcast, She Has a Name. This is A Word with Jason Johnson. Stay tuned. You're listening to A Word with Jason Johnson. Today, we're talking about the podcast, She Has a Name, with host Tanya Mosley. Your sister Anita Wiley's story is really painful, even years before she disappeared and died. For those who haven't heard the podcast yet, introduce us to her. Like, what did you learn about her at her core? I mean, you're picking up these bits and pieces, kind of researching, kind of asking people, but who was she?
When I learn about the attributes of Anita, when I learn about her personality, what she liked, what she hoped for, what she dreamed about, it all sounds like me. We were so similar, but her life trajectory was very different because of several things that happened in her life. She had Antonio when she was 14 years old. Her mother died when she was 17 of cancer. And when her mother died, her stepfather left the family. They went to the funeral. All the kids came home. Anita was 17. She had a 3-year-old son, Antonio, and she had 2 younger siblings. They all went home and their father never came back. Her stepfather never came back. So she took care of the household. So she had to figure out how to care for these kids, how to keep the bills afloat, all of that stuff. And she got into drugs. Drug dealers were the ones who helped her. They helped her pay rent. They helped her buy food. And they taught her how to sell drugs. She was a hustler. And that's the part that reminds me of myself, because I think that we often think of the term hustler in negative terms, but like she was doing what she needed to do to survive, but she also was bringing joy to the house. Her siblings and Antonio talk about how they never felt like they were struggling because she seemed to have it all together. And when I think about when I was 17, 18, 19 years old, what she was able to do was just remarkable. But I also see that she didn't have anyone there for her in the ways that I had. I had a strong foundation through my mother and my mother's side of the family. And so as she delved deeper and deeper into drugs, she just fell into a world that really she should not have been a part of. But there was no other way for her because she didn't have other adults in her life. You know, she disappeared when she was 28 years old. So that's really young. It's before she even had a chance to even conceptualize finding her way out of this world. I think her sister Val is a great representation of like what could have happened if she had not been murdered.
I was more like the homie kind, and you didn't really have no friends, and she was outgoing and, you know how to put on her makeup and a dresser. She, well, all of us are dressers, but yeah, she was a dresser. I mean, stay sharp every day.
Her sister also fell into drugs, also sold drugs, but she was able to get out of that life. She was able to find treatment. She was able to have children and have a family. When I look at all of that, I think about all of the people who didn't make it from that time frame, from the 80s during the crack era, who got caught up. People who are caught up to this day, and we vilify them. We think of them as pariahs often. We also think that they have some moral character flaw or failing, especially when they go into the depths of drugs. I think that we are better at understanding that drug use is psychological and physical. But, you know, back in the 80s, you know, we all bought into the war on drugs. Like, you should be punished if you are involved in any way. And so I thought it was very important to tell a nuanced story about someone like her, because she wouldn't be someone that the news would cover. The news didn't cover her disappearance. She's not someone that we would see a special on. We would just say, oh, she made all those choices and they were bad choices. And so in some way, was what we're saying when we say that is that she deserved what was ultimately her fate.
Did you ever like go through your life and hers and look at how you differed, right? Like, what were some key moments in your life growing up, and how did those look in contrast to what you started to find out about your sister's life?
I think the interesting thing about that, and this is a really good question, is I was 9 years old when she disappeared. And of course, as you know, I didn't find out about her until I was an adult. But I think about what was the difference in my life versus hers. And I think about when I was 14 years old. People are surprised to hear this because of who I am now and the woman that I was able to become because of the interventions in my life. But when I was 14 years old, I was having sex. I was smoking marijuana. I was skipping school. I was doing all of those things. And there was a big intervention in my life with my mother and with my family and with teachers who would tell my mom. I had a best friend who is no longer with us, because she didn't make it, that the principal of our school and our English teacher had an intervention with my mom and said, Tanya's really smart. She keeps going in this direction and she's going to end up with a baby. She's not going to make it. And so my family was really instrumental in that. And I see through Anita's story that she didn't have that with the death of her mother and the abandonment of her stepfather. And, you know, our father that we share was MIA. You know, he was off doing his own thing. So I just see that as the difference. She did not have people in her life who could steer her in another direction. I even remember, and people almost laugh at this every time I bring it up because I'm just not this person anymore. But I remember there was a brief moment where I thought, maybe I could sell drugs to make money. I came from the same environment that she came from. We were poor. I thought we were middle class, but we were really, really poor. And I knew that if I wanted anything in life, I would have to work for it and make it on my own. And so I briefly thought about that too. So I can't really judge the decisions that she made because I do understand them.
To get to know your sister, you had to talk to a part of the family you didn't know very well. What was that like? And how did you get these people to trust you as opposed to be like, hey, that's family business. We don't want that out in the street.
One thing that I knew just from being a journalist and interviewing people of color, specifically Black people, about things that are deeply personal. When you come from a mainstream media organization, there's always a little bit of suspicion because we just don't see ourselves reflected in nuanced ways. So there was a little suspicion like, what are you trying to do? So there was some of that that I had to work through just by persistence. But then once I got people to talk, I also had to slow them down because the ways we do see ourselves are often incomplete or through sound bites. So they're trying to get everything in all at once. And it's like, no, we have all the time in the world for you to dig up the memories and the thoughts you have and tell me how you're feeling. So that took a moment. It added almost a full year to our production schedule because there are a lot of people that I talked to who then ghosted me, you know, and I had to like keep reaching out to them, going to Detroit and just showing up and showing them that I wasn't in it just for something really quick, but I was invested in the story. And then also Antonio played a huge role in this because everyone who was there during that time who knew my sister, of course, they knew Antonio and they knew that he was a child and he needed to find out answers about his mother. And so they were doing it for him. Not sure why he wanted to do it, because I had a lot of people saying, like, I don't know why Antonio needs to tell this story, but it seems like he needs to do it. And so if this is part of his healing, we want to help him do it.
We're going to take a short break and we come back more about the She Has a Name podcast with host Tanya Mosley. This is A Word with Jason Johnson. Stay tuned. You're listening to A Word with Jason Johnson. Today, we're talking about the She Has a Name podcast with host Tanya Mosley. Several episodes of the podcast are out in the world now. What kind of response have you heard from your family, from other people? You know, what's the reaction been?
I was most afraid about the family, I'm going to be honest, Jason. You know, I just wanted them to feel like they were represented correctly. They've been very happy with how the story is coming together, and also it's bigger than they ever thought it would be. Because they've never seen themselves in this kind of format, the people that I talk to be able to hear it in its totality, it's like, wow, this is our story, and it's riveting, and it's compelling. I think we often think, like, why is our story important? Why would people want to know about our lives, even if it is something fantastical that has happened? What I found from people who are not my family is that they end up telling me about their lives. And that's when I know that a story has hit people, when they send me a message and they're like, oh, let me tell you about my aunt or cousin or my mother. And it's not like exact. It's maybe about family dysfunction or coming together, reunification, mourning death and dying, dealing with the grief of loss. And that's when I know that a story is powerful. So I'm happy that this podcast is a portal for people to be self-reflective. It's been a chance for me to deeply reflect on myself. You know, when you get to be my age, you think you know everything about yourself. And I'm learning so many things about me that I didn't know.
I want to ask you sort of a question about legacy. This is how I view your podcast. I think of Roots in the 70s, this sort of very important Black story that is a disruptor in this majority white space. I think of Soledad O'Brien's Black in America, this Black series, which was a huge disruptor in this majority white space of 24-hour cable and CNN in particular. Your podcast, you know, being a host of Fresh Air, to me, it's in the legacy of Roots. It's in the legacy of Black in America, of going into this majority white space and saying, look, there is a space here for these kinds of stories as well. What do you think the legacy of your podcast will be? Do you think it's the beginning of a fundamental change? Or do you think it's sort of part of a grander change in storytelling that we're starting to hear across the media landscape as more and more Black people have access to these stories and outlets to share them?
That's a big question. I will say that maybe years ago, I led with like this mission to diversify NPR, to bring voices that were representative of our country in a more holistic way, because like we are so important to this country. And like I wanted to see that reflected. I don't actually see that as my role anymore. Like I'm very purpose driven in telling these stories because they're important to tell and they're for everyone. And I'm doing it for us, but I also am not doing it to try to make NPR something. I'm doing it because I feel like it's really important. And whether I'm doing it with NPR or not, I'd be doing it. But, you know, when you started off asking me that question and talking about legacy, I've been telling stories for a long time. And I have said many, many times, like, storytelling can be healing. And yes, I believe it. I really believe it. But it wasn't until I started doing this podcast and actually my previous podcast, Truth Be Told, that I actually saw it. And I saw it through the listeners and what they were sharing with us. I saw it with myself and the transformation within myself. If I have a moment, I just want to tell you a story that ties into this podcast. The last season of my other podcast, Truth Be Told, I did a psychedelic journey. I wanted to take a look at how, at this a new burgeoning science that shows that psychedelics could be a wonderful treatment to help heal racial trauma. And so I went on my own journey to figure out whether it was for me and what would come from me going on a journey like this, a therapeutic journey. And during that journey, like literally when I was high on mushrooms, I had an encounter with my uncle Benny, who had died by suicide in the 80s. And he said to me during that journey, "You need to talk about me. You need to talk about me with your children." When you're in this type of state, it's kind of like being in a deep meditative state. Really what it is a conversation with myself. It's me coming to those thoughts. And he is just a show of that in my mind and my imagination telling me that. But what it was actually true. My uncle died of suicide. And when he died, his name and his presence died with it because the pain was so much that people never talked about my uncle. But he was deeply important to me and who I am as a person. If you want to understand me, you need to understand my relationship with my uncle, who is foundational in so many things. After that journey, I came home and I started to talk about my uncle to my kids, and they were really interested to know, and it helps them understand themselves. With Anita's story, and she has a name, Antonio, he never told anyone about his mother except for me. He felt like he trusted me enough after we built a relationship to tell me more and more detail about his mother. And through that, I understood that he had not shared details with his own children. He has 5 children. They never even heard him say his mother's name. And yet there's not a moment that passes by that he's not thinking about his mother. He's thinking about her constantly. How can they know and understand their father if they don't know that about their father? If they don't know about the woman who directs his steps every single day, his behaviors, the way he interacts with them, the suffering in silence, that invisible ache, and them understanding and knowing that story, knowing Anita's story helps them understand themselves. And so it breaks this cycle of pain and trauma and silence that we just continue to hold on and pass on through generations. And so when I think about the legacy of it, I know it's for the greater audience. I know it's for all of us to be reflective of ourselves, but that's what I want people to take away. And that's what it's given for our family, is an opening for us to have these conversations. Antonio's now talking to his children about his mother in ways that he never has before. His eldest daughter said, "I finally understand my dad now." How powerful is that? To not understand this man for all of her life and finally understand the choices he made and the silences that he kept. So that's what I think of when I think of the legacy of this. That's what I'm holding on to right now.
Tanya Mosley is the host of the She Has a Name podcast, available wherever you listen to podcasts. She's also the co-host of NPR's Fresh Air. Tanya Mosley, thanks so much. I really, really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you, Jason.
That's a word for this week. The show's email is a word@slate.com. This episode was produced by Ayana Angel. Ben Richmond is Slate's Senior Director of Podcast Operations. Alicia Montgomery is the Vice President of Slate Audio. Our theme music was produced by Don Will. I'm Jason Johnson. Tune in next week for Word.